drivers to slow down. And so work will continue in the middle, milling pavement, striping the road, installing the pavers that will help form the rhombus and the places to park, the curbs, planters, and electrical work. There will be narrow travel lanes and traffic delays for a couple months as we work through it. But access to businesses and driveways will all remain open, and we've tried to preserve as much parking as we can on El Camino between 41 and Traffic Way. But do be mindful of pedestrians during construction, please. You can always go to atascadero.org/ECR project, and we have some slides up there you can see too. Winter Wonderland is coming, so we didn't have enough fun last weekend. We just thought we'd keep the party going. Winter Wonderland is one of the largest events in the Central Coast, and it'll be December 13th from 5 to 9. We'll have over 70 tons of snow this year, with the largest snow slide on the Central Coast, built by, probably shouldn't mention it now that two of my bosses are in the Rotary Club, but the Kiwanis Club also helps with that. This year's snow-themed event includes bungee jumps, obstacle courses, community entertainment, the train, Santa and his elves, and so much more. So it'll be a great evening Friday. If that's not enough fun, now through December 22nd, we are supporting and sponsors of Christmas at the Santa Margarita Ranch. And so this is a newer venture. Vintage Traditions Foundation and AGM Community Partners are inviting us to come aboard to ride the Pacific Coast Railroad's Jingle Bell Express. I can hear it from my house in the evenings. Santa's Village is there. You can see Santa. There's treats. And just this old school kind of ranch fun Christmas. And so Visit Atascadero is the official lodging partner for this. We want to continue to support this event. So now through December 22nd, you do need to buy your tickets ahead of time. And then we want to celebrate our animals. So we will be giving them gifts on December 21st, Holiday Magic, at the Charles Paddock Zoo. And that is 10 to 1. And our zookeepers will be working with Santa's elves to deliver gifts to our animals. We'll have a magician, live music, and another opportunity to visit Santa. We are Santa's favorite city next to the North Pole. So we have a lot of Santa this year. We're thankful to have him. It'll be great. And while you're there, shop for gifts. We have a great gift shop. It's stacked full of stuff, a lot of animal-themed gifts. And the zoo membership is also a great stocking stuffer. The zoo is looking terrific. I'm really thrilled that we have our visit next week from the Accreditation Board of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. We'll be the staff this week continues to do final things to make sure our zoo is in the best position it could be. It looks fabulous. And I thank the zoo staff and the entire staff for the work they've been doing at the zoo, the volunteers in our community. Many of the service clubs have really stepped up. So if you haven't been to the zoo in a while, please come visit it, support it. And you can do that with a $50 individual pass or a $100 family pass. They're great gifts. And that family pass gets two adults and four dependent children. So just a terrific gift. So that's available. The zoo will be open 10 to 4 throughout the holidays. My final two slides, we have the Community Center Blood Drive, December 30th at Atascadero Colony Park. You can register through Vitalant to donate blood or come to the Bloodmobile there. There's also a QR code if you want to register. So I do have one last item. The League of California Cities has set the 2025 priorities. I was involved in that last week as a board member. Fresh off the press, the advocacy priorities for Cal Cities next year will be 1, protecting local revenues and expanding economic development tools. 2, strengthening climate change resiliency and disaster preparedness. 3, strengthen and modernizing critical infrastructure. We added this year bridges, broadband, and the energy grid to that goal, a focus on that. And 4, securing investments to prevent and reduce homelessness and increasing the supply of affordable housing with a specific focus on expanding consistent funding for wraparound services and also giving local decision to communities to make our housing goals. And so some additions I thought you'd be interested. Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Does any member of the Council have questions regarding the City Manager's report? Okay, then we will move on to Community Forum. Community Forum is reserved for persons wanting to address the City Council on any matter not on the agenda, but over which the Council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record before making your comments. The City Council is not able under the Brown Act to discuss anything raised in Community Forum beyond superficial questions. And so the Council at its discretion may ask staff to answer a question or comment. All right, thank you. We have our first speaker. Oh, let's make sure the mic is on. And clerk, do we have the clock up?
Oh, it was on. Okay, thank you. I'm Susan Warren. I'm with North County Connection, which is a local nonprofit recovery resource center. We've been here for approximately 30 years. We're one of the best-kept secrets in the community, and that some of that's by design. But this week, we took a look at this, the community development needs assessment that was just done by the county. And as I was looking through this, the first 36 pages are about the questions they ask and all of that. Then there's another 96 pages in here of comments where people, that was the last question, you have comments on improvements over the next 5 years. And there were a lot of things in here that really address the community education that we've wanted to reach out and do. And because of a grant we got this year, we've been able to hire 2 part-time recovery navigators, and they're certified peer support persons. They're doing a lot of community outreach already on their own in the community, but we're kind of giving them a hub to work from. And Wendy's going to come up in a little bit and tell you some of the special things we're trying to do to help address some of the opioid issues with Narcan training and looking at offering more community education support. And she's going to talk about those 2 programs. In the meantime, we run approximately 17 different meetings. They meet once a week, and they're group support meetings, peer support. They're all different kinds of meetings. We have the only 2 Naranon meetings, which are for the family and friends of people with addiction problems, between Santa Barbara and Salinas. And we have the ability to do a hybrid meeting, so we have people there, but we can also have people online attending these meetings. We're going to be adding a Families Anonymous meeting, which is just kind of families in general that are having a problem with a family member or loved one that's got a mental health issue or whatever kind of issue. But that peer support and knowing you're not alone with these problems is really important to help stabilize the families, which then helps stabilize the person that's having those issues. We're open 7 days a week. There's people there every day. We serve approximately each month, coming to those different 18 meetings each week. It's about 1,100 people that are there. And we're helping prevent relapse. We're bringing in newcomers and trying to support not just the individual with the addiction issues, but also the family members. And let's see, we have a library, an extensive library on all kinds of recovery topics. So what we're trying to do is be the boots on the ground that we can add something when we see there's an issue. And that's what we're trying to do.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Wendy Blacker. I'm actually here on behalf of North County Connection. I am one of the peer support specialists there. I want to make it public notice that I am a certified Narcan trainer and provider. It's something that I think everyone in the world should carry with them and should be trained in using. I can't count how many times I've been out with a Tascadero CAT team and have seen someone overdosed on the side of the road or in the tent or at Tent City. So it's something that I think all of us need to learn about. I'm passionate about this because when I go into a pharmacy and I see them charge $50 for a box of Narcan, that hurts my heart. I think it should be free to the world, and I'm here to provide that, and I'm here to train. So if anyone wants, they can come down to the North County Connection, get as much Narcan as you want. I have about 3,000 doses of Narcan at my disposal, and also fentanyl test strips. And also, I am going to bring to the North County Connection Smart Recovery. So the fellowship is great, but that is social. It's a social support. I want to bring the science behind addiction to North County Connection. I want to bring, it is cognitive behavioral therapy. That's what helped me get clean. I bring 25 years worth of addiction and homelessness to the table. Now I actually run my own nonprofit. I have a house. I have a great job. I have people that believe in me. I'm on HSOC with Susan Funk. And it's just, I want the world to know everyone can change. I want everyone to not think that people like me are hopeless, because I'm here as a living testament. So, thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Babette Dekou, and I live at 6705 Santa Lucia Avenue. And I'm here tonight to talk about the importance of the conditional use permit process. I know it works because it significantly impacted our lives for the better. When ECHO first started the homeless shelter, it operated through the Baptist Church. We approached the city manager and the police chief regarding issues and concerns we had despite the many efforts of ECHO volunteers, and we were told the city had no jurisdiction over faith-based operations. When the church was donating the building to ECHO, it was actually city staff that contacted us to let us know about the conditional use permit process, and that now was our opportunity to provide input and make requests. These requests became requirements within the conditional use permit. The main requirement was a permanent wall between ECHO and our property, and this dramatically changed our relationship to ECHO and virtually eliminated the theft, trespassing, and vandalism of our property by ECHO clients staying on the premises. The addition of permanent staff and the yearly meeting with neighbors was also a positive feature of the conditional use permit. This is why we actually supported the addition of the new facility at ECHO at the last meeting. It is also why we became vocal about the new amendment to the CUP and the increase in the feeding program. Our concern is about the concentration of unhoused people within our small neighborhood as a result of this program, and our belief that this is a city issue, not just an ECHO issue. There was a misperception that the increase to the meal program was required because of the new building. However, at the planning committee meeting, ECHO staff made clear that they could fill the new building with people on the waiting list, people already receiving meals. So when we met individually with ECHO staff before the council meeting, I specifically asked why they needed to increase the number of meals served if they were serving people on the waiting list already. And they told us that city staff asked them to look 5 years in advance because of the complexity of the conditional use permit. I have faith that Jim Lewis will convene a meeting with the neighbors, city staff, and ECHO staff and identify issues and potential solutions, but I contend that was what the CUP process was for. In approving the CUP, the only leverage we have is eliminated. Charles actually asked the question, does the council need to approve this part of the CUP? And I contend that was the right question to ask. I understand the complexities, but I'm saying to be careful and not approve CUPs unless all parties are notified and meetings take place and concerns are identified and addressed. The conditional use permit process is often the only leverage that citizens have, and I can attest that it can positively impact lives.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening, Jay Dekou, 6705 San Lucia. I'm here to talk about also the public CUP process that we neighbors felt blindsided by this last ECHO move. It's clear when we found out about 2 weeks before this all came down, they'd been working on it a long time. They had a full set of plans drawn, so they and staff had been interacting on this for some time. And in 2013, when we made that last agreement, they were supposed to be notifying the neighbors and bringing us in on the process. Well, it ended up, I thought we had a 500-foot radius. It ended up they notified people within 300 feet. Well, my property's 297 feet deep. And so then you put the 50-foot street on there. St. William's Church doesn't get notified. They were one of the highly impacted properties in the neighborhood through this whole process. So it seems to me that we need to bring on something that's this wide of an issue for the city more notice. All the families that live on the creek are all impacted. But when I contact them, only one of them, John Sanders, who requests to get notified, he's the only one of all of them that I asked had been notified, and none of them knew it was happening. So it just seems to me we need to somehow get more notice out on these things that are of a bigger impact to the community. Thank you much.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Hi, good evening. My name is Maggie Payne. I'm the new Special Projects Coordinator at First Five Slo County, and I am here representing the Early Care and Education Planning Council's Advocacy Committee. We are a group committed to building and furthering the important work of the We Are the Care initiative. For those of you who are unfamiliar with We Are the Care, this multi-sector coalition was founded in 2019 and mobilized individuals and agencies to pursue collective ways to address the child care crisis. I have some exciting updates for you regarding child care here on the Central Coast, because it's been a while since I've been here, and I'm here to reinvigorate your support for this movement. So since We Are the Care last gave comment, much progress has been made to lift up child care in our county. $3 million in county ARPA funds allocated to child care have been dispersed to local providers and are continuing to be dispersed. This has allowed the field a bit of relief from the extra strain of COVID in the form of competitive and non-competitive grants. Child care providers are small businesses like many others, but they faced an extra unique set of challenges during the pandemic. Another significant accomplishment is the continuation of the collaborative child care study. It's among the four of our county's biggest public agencies, Cal Poly, the City of Slo, the County of Slo, and San Luis Coastal. The study's goal is to examine and implement viable options towards a vision that all residents and public employees in our communities have access to quality and affordable child care. These entities are actually estimated to represent about 10% of our county's entire workforce, so their focus on child care has actually been a really immense support and example to others among the community. Additionally, this one I'm really excited about, in our local community and beyond, child care is increasingly being recognized as a foundational component of economic vitality. Uplift Central Coast is a coalition dedicated to the economic resilience of the six-county Central Coast region from Santa Cruz to Ventura, and they recently released a regional plan based on data and community feedback and involvement. Throughout the plan, Uplift called out child care as a main economic mobility strategy. So a notice of funding opportunity has been released as a companion to this report, and 17 different agencies from all of the six counties have requested funding for a project involving child care. Six of those 17 requests are from Slo County, and one is from First Five. So those are just some of the examples that show the continuing work that's been being done for child care in the background in San Luis Obispo County. We are dedicated to continuing to further that work and that of others. So finally, we want to let you know that the Early Care and Education Planning Council will be hosting a council retreat from 9 to 3 on Friday, January 31st. In the spirit of We Are the Care, the retreat will focus on collective impact, and as our civic leaders, you are critical to this work. So mark your calendars. The retreat will be held on Friday, January 31st, and a formal invitation will follow. The Advocacy Committee will be back in the new year with more updates, and we look forward to your continued support in 2025. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments and great timing. Okay, I don't see anybody else wishing to speak at Community Forum. We will close Community Forum. Thank you for your comments regarding the CUP process, regarding ECHO in particular. And indeed, Mr. Lewis will be convening a meeting as called for in a separate direction that we provided at our last regularly scheduled meeting. And we will ensure that proper notification, or not proper, but wider notification is given. Also want to thank Sue Warren. It's always good to hear occasionally what Connections is up to, and North County Connections. And thank you for what you do for our community. Okay, council have any other comments? Okay, then we will move on to our next item is public hearings. Item C1, the Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District Assessment. Do we have any ex parte communications? Any council members? None? No, I have none. Okay, this is going to be presented, I assume, by Ms. Terry Banish.
Yes, good evening. Thank you, Mayor Borbo and council. So this is the agenda item for this evening for the public hearing required to make the increase in the Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District Lodging Assessment. This meeting is the protest meeting to receive all written and verbal protest votes from the lodging owners. To give a quick recap of where we are today, the proposed assessment increase, the Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District Advisory Board, or the ATBID, had identified that an increase in the assessment from 2 to 2.5% is what would make the difference to increase lodging stays by focusing on the infrastructure at our local zoo and the adjacent areas of our lake park, to invest in and to drive our events, tourism, and lodging stays in the city. The increase in the assessment for the lodging owner would begin early January 2025. The lodging owner assessment is an assessment that each lodging business collects and remits to the city that is based on the rent charged by the business per occupied room or space per night for lodging guests or transient occupancies. The at-bid assessment is equal to 2.5%, which is an additional amount of 0.5% over the current rate of 2%. Following the City Council meeting on October 8th, the resolution was adopted, and on October 9th, a letter was mailed and an email was sent to the lodging owners, notifying them of the increase along with the public notice requirements. The assessment increase will be at the direction of the at-bid advisory board, and it will be tracked by myself, the destination manager, make sure that that assessment is used properly. And in addition, projects and opportunities will be brought to the at-bid advisory board for city staff as opportunities present themselves. In summary, we are acting on behalf of the at-bid advisory board to present the 0.5% increase and move forward with a put in place an increase in the assessment to help fund these physical improvements. So for this evening, hang on one second. The recommendation before you is to conduct the public hearing to receive all written and verbal protest votes from lodging owners for a non-majority, less than 50% protest, council to conduct the second reading of the draft at-bid assessment increase ordinance amending Title 3, and then Chapter 16, Section 3-16.04, and changing the assessment rate under the Streets and Highways Code Section 36541A for lodging businesses within the at-bid from 2 to 2.5%. Which will begin early January 2025, or if there is a majority protest of over 50% to not conduct the second reading of draft at-bid assessment increase ordinance and the at-bid assessment stays at 2%. That concludes my report.
All right, thank you. Do any members of the council have questions of staff on this item? Okay, I will now open this issue to public comment. Are there any members of the public wishing to speak on this item?
Hello, my name is Angela Cisneros, and I'm the incoming president for the Friends of the Charles Paddock Zoo, so obviously we would love this. You know, the zoo is definitely a part of the tourism draw for Atascadero, and we all know the city doesn't have the capacity to fund it like it needs to be, which is where the Friends comes into play. In the last year and a half, we have restructured, we have grown our board, and we're working very closely with the city and the zoo director and Terry to really align everything we do, the actions, our strategies, so that we have the greatest impact. This money would really help the animals of our zoo in various capacities, and we feel very grateful and honored to be considered. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor Borbo and council members. My name is Josh Cross. I'm wearing two hats this evening, first as a board member of the Friends of the Charles Paddock Zoo and also as the CEO of the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce. As my previous board member, Angela, mentioned, the board has a lot of new energy and momentum that we haven't seen in a long time, which has just been infectious. And a lot of it has been due to our amazing new director and the work that Terry Banish is doing. And so we are re-energized, and we are motivated to do whatever we can to build these new exhibits and to build these conservation programs for the zoo. In the last year, we've made financial contributions to not-so-visible items like freezers and x-ray machines, anesthesia machines, and just some other things to prepare for the accreditation. There hasn't been this flashy new exhibit yet, but we're getting there. We're going to get there because we have big plans for these new exhibits and beautification. And the funds that we're talking about here today will go a long way in helping with these new projects, and as well as helping with our long-term goal of being financially independent of city funding. So that is a long-term goal. We're hoping to get there. On the chamber side, I'm also in support of this proposed assessment increase, as well as my board of directors. For I don't know how many years our board of directors has made a donation from the proceeds of our wine festival to the zoo to the tune of $10,000. This year, our board felt like, you know what, we really need to do more. So at the 2025 Wine Festival, the Chamber will be making an additional $5,000 donation for a total of $15,000, because we believe in this zoo as being a driver of economic development, of community, a place where that builds our community and enriches lives. So I hope that you will consider approving the proposed assessment increase this evening. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other people wishing to speak for public comment? Okay. If not, I did not hear any protests. I'll ask the city clerk, did we receive any, and have you had time to tabulate the results?
We received no protests. So okay. Yes, I have.
So we've had time. Very good. Are there any council comments? Okay. Okay, then do we have a motion to approve the recommendation? Move based on no majority protest, right?
Yes. Yes, based on no majority protest, we move the recommendations 1 and 2. We are conducting the hearing, and we have recommended.
Got it. Okay, thank you. We have a motion by Councilmember Funk, second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peek?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
And Mayor Borbo?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right. Yeah. A little hesitation there. We're all going to be a little... All right. Next, we're going to move on to management reports. Item D1, consideration of action to fill the vacant treasurer position arising from former treasurer Jerry Seabach's resignation. This item will be presented by the city manager, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Yes, I'm pleased to share with you action regarding the vacant treasurer position. As you know, our city treasurer did submit his resignation and served very well, and we were grateful to be able to honor him this evening. So under state law, we do need to have a city treasurer. It is a state office required by cities to have the city treasurer. And so, as you know, our city treasurer currently is elected and serves a four-year term. And so with the resignation, within 60 days of the vacancy, the government code requires the council to fill the vacancy by appointment of an eligible individual or through a special election to fill the vacancy. And so, therefore, we have until February 8th to appoint a successor or to call a special election. If you do appoint the city treasurer, the term would move through the remainder of Treasurer Seabach's term through November 26, at which point the individual would have to run for office for city treasurer. And so I do want to share that in the choices you have here, I was disappointed to learn in contacting the county clerk recorder, Alana Cano, who also serves as our elections official, that she was very quick to share with us that she would not support us having a special election. Her office, which it was surprising to me because there were big changes and other issues she was dealing with, and so we would need to go to a third-party private election, which could likely cost upwards to $500,000. And so a special election would be very expensive and time-consuming for the city, and so I would certainly suggest you consider an appointment to this position, and you may do so tonight if you wish. An appointment is by majority of the city council. In absence of the city treasurer, I would submit that potentially, we are not able to make investments or sell or purchase securities. That is a power of the city treasurer, and the deputy director, Ringel, has been able to do that under guidance of the city treasurer. But not having a city treasurer, and you can, if you're curious about that, you can hear more from that, I believe would perhaps pause investments. So we should be looking to appoint a city treasurer sooner than later. And so it is my recommendation that you consider appointing or having a special election, though a special election would be very, very expensive, and I am frustrated that the county cannot support us in that effort. So I'll conclude my presentation. I'm happy to answer questions about the office or specifics of what the office does, and any other questions you may have. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Does any member of the council have questions for the city manager? Go ahead, Councilmember Funk.
Yeah, just to follow up a little bit. Are there, Clearly that we're in a situation where we're looking at, are we appointing now or appointing, after sometime between now and February. Are there risks to the city financially or transactions we can't do if the treasurer's position is unfilled at any given point? Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, Director Engel, would you like to share some of the thoughts we've had as we looked into state and local law and the thoughts we had today?
Yes, thank you so much. Certainly, as City Manager Lewis indicated, the city treasurer is an appointment that is required by state law to have. It's both in our the state code, the city code, and certain authorities are given to the treasurer, and the treasurer does have the ability to delegate some of those. But, for instance, he had former Treasurer Seebach had delegated some of those activities to me as finance director, which now without that treasurer in the position, that delegation goes away. So my concern would be that we would not have the ability to do, as Mr. Lewis said, with selling and purchasing more investments, which could have the impact of not losing out on interest for the city that we could be obtaining if we had a treasurer in that position.
Thank you. One other question. This is probably for the, this is for Ms. Rangel or Ms. Christensen, but when the council considered the putting measure M24 on the ballot to make the treasurer an appointed position on a permanent basis, we discussed that our intent was, if given that authority, to appoint Ms. Rangel. So I just wanted to confirm if Ms. Rangel also meets the requirements of being at least 18 years old, I think so, and a resident of the city of Atascadero, which would be required for elected position.
She does. She is an elector of the city and a resident, so she does meet the qualifications based on state regulation.
She is also a certified municipal treasurer, but she may not share that with you because she's very humble.
Yes, yes. And unfortunately, the state does not allow us to require that kind of skill, so we had to go back to a little more minimal. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions from council members? I had one. Mr. Lewis, you can confirm, can you confirm that we and Paso Robles are the only two cities in this county that have an elected treasurer?
That is correct, and the elected treasurer in Paso Robles is the Director of Administrative Services.
Correct, and all of the other five appointed treasurers are all their respective full-time finance directors.
That is correct, Mayor.
Correct, and that is the norm throughout the state. Where you have appointed treasurers.
That is correct, and I think the office has just gotten more complicated as financial instruments and regulatory requirements and other things have happened, so it requires quite a bit of expertise.
Right. Okay, with that, if there's no further questions from council, we will go out and see if there's any public comment on this item. Mr. Seebach, you're in the audience. Do you have any public comment? You don't have to by any stretch. So don't feel pressured to do it. Maybe...
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I'm not sure what you want me to say, but I do support the idea of having you make an appointment of Jerry Rangel. I would recommend that, if that's possible, at soonest possible date, she would do an excellent job. And it's possible to have the jobs being combined in one person. As you said, all the other cities in our county and many others across the state have that situation. I myself was the appointed city finance director and treasurer in the city of Morro Bay many years ago. So it can work with elected and appointed or anyway, and whichever the situation may be. So I think that you should explore that with the city attorney, perhaps, whether you, if there needs to be a process of asking for community people to volunteer or anything like that. If not, I would say have Jerry.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sivak. Okay, let's bring it back. With any other members of the public? Does not look like it. Okay, we will bring it back for council discussion and then a motion on this item. I would have a couple of comments myself on this particular issue. You know, as noted earlier, the only legal requirement for an elected city treasurer is to be 18 years old and an elector in the city. Now, some people might find that a little crazy, but that's the fact of the matter. We have, in my estimation, you know, the most qualified person sitting here in the form of our finance director, and we're fortunate she does live in the city, so she is an elector and meets that qualification. It might be a different scenario if she lived outside the city, which could be possible. And for me, you know, I mean, running a special election for a treasurer would be kind of crazy in the first place, but then with the idea of the cost, it would be completely irresponsible. And, you know, I don't feel personally that we that it's warranted or that we even should, in this particular case, entertain a process by which we would encourage people to apply when we know we have the gold standard sitting over here in the form of our finance director. It would almost be disingenuous for us to do that. If this was a city council vacancy, I would feel completely different, that we would absolutely have a public process and people applying and interviewing them, and we can easily, not to denigrate our value, but we can easily go without one council member for a period of, you know, 30, 60, 90 days. but we cannot or should not, rather, go without a treasurer. So, those are my comments on this particular vacancy. Do we have any other comments, or would somebody like to make a motion? And let's double check, though, with the city attorney. There is no problem or issue with us making an appointment this evening, is there?
That's correct. The government code provides you two options. You either appoint or you conduct a special election, but it does not provide any guidelines or standards for the appointment. So it's entirely up to the council as to what procedures it would like to impose upon itself to make that appointment.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? Councilmember Funk.
I would second the mayor's comments that if this were a council position, we would definitely need to have a public process. Since there are risks to the city, of leaving this particular position open, and it requires specialized expertise as opposed to the kind of generalized representative expertise that the rest of us on the dais offer. I would be honored to nominate that we appoint Ms. Jerry Rangel as city treasurer for the remainder of the existing term.
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. We have any further discussion? Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk, second by Councilmember Newsom. Can we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peake?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Yes.
And Mayor Borgo?
Yes. And congratulations, Ms. Rangel, for your additional title.
Can I issue her oath really quickly?
Yes, and I will add that awesome. We thank you for doing it, because there's no extra pay for her, and it actually saves the city about $17,000 a year. So thank you. Go ahead. Do you want to bring her down to the well? Okay. Jerry?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, feels like we're getting important things done already. The next item up on here is committee reports, and as we already did kind of closing committee reports earlier in the meeting, at this point in time, I, as the newly elected mayor, will assign council members to standing committees. I'm going to go down the list that the city clerk conveniently provided for me with the current names, and I'm going to read them off, so you'll want to listen closely. Okay, yes. Although I'm sure the clerk will be able to provide an updated copy when, as long as she can read my handwriting, which is a challenge. Okay, we're going to start off at the top. Air Pollution Control District will remain Mayor Pro Tem DeRiz with myself as the alternate. The Atascadero Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency will remain Councilmember Funk with myself as the alternate. The CJPIA will remain Mayor Pro Tem DeRiz, and the alternates are staff members Lewis and Christensen. CAPSLO will remain Mayor Pro Tem DeRiz, alternate. Well, we didn't have an alternate, but I was wondering if Councilmember Funk would serve as the alternate on that. The City Schools Committee will be Newsom, Councilmember Newsom, and Councilmember Peak. The City Selection Committee will be myself, and there is no alternate on that. The County Mayor's Roundtable will be myself, with the alternate being the Mayor Pro Tem, Mark DeRiz. The Design Review Committee will be Councilmember Funk as the chair and Councilmember Peak. REACH will be Councilmember Funk with an alternate of Newsom. The Finance Committee will be adding Councilmember Peak and will be chaired by Councilmember Newsom. The Homeless Services Oversight Council will be Councilmember Funk with myself as the alternate. The IWMA will be myself with Funk as the alternate. The League of California's City Council Liaison will be Newsom with Funk as the alternate. SLOCOG will be Councilmember Newsom with myself as the alternate, as is the same with RTA, as those are kind of one and the same for meeting purposes. And the Water Resources Advisory Committee will be Councilmember Peak. And Visit SLOCAL Advisory Committee will be Mayor Pro Tem DeRiz with myself as the alternate. And I will provide this to the clerk, so if you didn't write fast enough, she will get everybody a copy, and we will go from there. So look forward to everybody serving on their committees, and I think tried to balance it so that everybody has roughly the same number of committees and a variety of regularly meeting committees and ones that meet less than regularly. So, okay, with that, we're going to move to individual determination and or action. Does any member of the council have anything under individual determination or action? Nope. Okay, the city council is now going to adjourn to closed session. Oh, I'm sorry, the city clerk would like clarification.
No, I just have something under individual determination.
Okay.
I just want to remind council that now that it is a new 2 year, that we will have need new appointments, at-large appointments for both CSTOC and Planning Commission, and so we will start the application process for those. We'll get that all noticed and out, and that I will reach out to get a special meeting with the council to conduct interviews sometime in January. And we can also do that. Each council member, the Planning Commission, all seven terms do expire technically December 31st, and they serve until new members. So every council member does have a individual appointment, and then the two at large that you will appoint as a group. So,
thank you very much for the reminder. And Councilmember Peak, yes, you have a planning commissioner you need to find and appoint. Okay. All right. With that, then we will move into closed session, and I will ask the city attorney to announce the closed session.
Pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision D4, anticipated litigation in one potential case.
Okay. Are there any members of the public wishing to speak on the closed session item before we adjourn into closed session? Okay. Seeing none, we will leave the chambers and begin our closed session, and when we will return out, the city attorney will report out whether there was any reportable action. Again, thank you all for coming. We appreciate it, and we are adjourned from open session.
At this time, AM 1230 KPRL concludes this portion of the Atascadero City Council meeting, brought to you by Idler's Home. More of what you want for your home. Go to idlershome.com. We invite you to join us the second and fourth Tuesday of each month for the Atascadero City Council meeting. We now join our regularly scheduled programming. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-555-2085, 800-555-2085, or biglou.com.
The county just requested more electric charging stations.
Orders have really amped up at Able Electric.
We need three more at First in Maine, and we just got another hotel chain.
It's no shock. Able Electric needs Able electricians.
Grocery store wants charging stations, too.
And fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Put our matching platform to work so you can spend less time searching and more time connecting with talented candidates. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Viking. Committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com. Viking.com.
AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM, The Right Choice. The Right Choice for local news with Chris Garcia. The Right Choice for Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi, Monday afternoons at 1. The Right Choice for Protecting What Matters, Tuesdays at 1230 with Barry Fisher. The Right Choice for Sound Off, Wednesdays and Thursdays at 1230 with Karen Veely. And the Right Choice for Open Mic Friday, 1230 till 2 with Al Fonzie. It's all The Right Choice here on AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM.
We see you sitting there, daydreaming about an escape, a place where infinite horizons mean more freedom. We're going big this December at Chumash Casino Resort, giving away over $600,000 in cash and prizes. That'll jingle your bells. Everything you need to find yourself elsewhere. Drawings every Sunday. And hey, welcome to freedom. Ho, ho, ho. Must be present to win. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This Friday from 5 to 9 p.m., Atascadero Sunken Gardens and the entire downtown will be transformed into a magical winter wonderland. With over 70 tons of snow, a massive snow slide, a snow pile area, Joe's little train, a bungee jump, and more. Santa and his elves will be there until 8, along with live music and dance performances. Shop downtown merchants and over 50 craft and food vendors. Winter Wonderland, this Friday from 5 to 9 p.m. Details at visitatascadero.com.
When it comes to solar energy, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Atascadero says, quote, Solarponics installed our solar system almost 20 years ago. The installation team was amazing. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. The Solarponics service teams are just as amazing. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing 46 years of install and service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners, is your water heater more than 10 years old? If so, upgrade to a heat pump water heater. Heat pump water heaters are 60% more energy efficient, saving thousands in energy costs. Plus, you'll help reduce carbon emissions. Best of all, you may qualify for up to a 50% rebate when replacing an old gas or propane water heater. Learn more at solarponics.com/waterheating. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
This hour of Lars Larson brought to you by Seniors Helping Seniors. Call 805-369-2110 or at seniorcareslo.com.
Did you know Lars has a face for radio?
He's hideous!
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. Less than a month before President-elect Donald Trump takes office, colleges are starting to cut their DEI programs and close down their so-called cultural centers nationwide. And I think that's a good thing. So I want to ask our friend Professor Nicholas Giordano, who's a professor of political science at Suffolk Community College, host of the PAS Report podcast, and a fellow at Campus Reform's Higher Education Fellowship. Professor Giordano, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Lars. Always a pleasure to join you, and we could at least be optimistic about the higher education system heading into 2025.
Yeah, Trump hasn't even arrived, isn't going to for a little over a month, about a month and 10 days, and yet the colleges are starting to shut some of these programs down. Have they realized that the writing is on the wall, or is there another reason they're doing that?
There are several reasons. The writing's on the wall, but they also realize that DEI is a losing proposition. It doesn't make any sense. It's a toxic ideology, and at the Leadership Institute's Campus Forum, we just put up an article that people can check out at campusforum.org that talks about how a California accrediting agency, the Western Association of Schools, is seeking to remove all DEI-related standards. They want to shift the focus to institutional excellence and success for all students, where the focus should have been the entire time. I mean, that was the whole basis for college. And this will actually force institutions to demonstrate progress in supporting students and preparing them for once they leave the colleges. So this is good news. But it's not just California. We're seeing this across the country. For instance, University of North Carolina has closed down 17 DEI offices and eliminated 60 DEI positions. That translates into millions of dollars that could go to cut tuition costs, to improve student learning, to catch students up from the lockdowns where students were out of school for 2 years. We're seeing movements in 30 states now that have either introduced legislation to take away the DEI standards, or colleges are doing it themselves. So this is certainly good news for the American people.
I would agree with you, but Professor, one of the things that's confused me is why any intellectual, why any professor at a college would have said, yeah, I don't think it's such a good idea to catch kids up. I mean, I had to take bonehead math when I went to I only went to college for about a year and a half, but I had to take bonehead math because my math scores were too low. Everything else was okay, but my math scores are bad. So I took math 99. And you were never that proud of telling fellow students, yeah, I'm in the math 99 class, because they knew that was bonehead math. But if it is, so what? And if you catch up by taking the bonehead courses, great. And if you don't, maybe college is not for you. How in the world did the colleges say, no, we need to go out and tell all these kids that the reason you didn't do well in algebra is because of your skin color, your gender, or how you like to dress, or what name you call yourself? Who thought that was a good idea?
Well, we have to understand that a lot of people within academia are not academics. They're actually ideologues. They're far-left ideologues that want to push an agenda. But ultimately, a college is a business, and there is a bottom line to that business. And so what have colleges seen since this big DEI push? Well, they've seen a major drop in enrollment. They've seen that the focus on race and victimhood, identity politics, well, that's why only 36% of the American people have a great deal of confidence or a lot of confidence in the higher education system. That number used to be a lot higher. They're seeing that 50% of employers have dropped four-year degree requirements for a lot of their positions, because 91% of them say that college graduates aren't prepared for the workforce, that the colleges are doing a terrible job. So as enrollment continues to decline, as confidence in higher education declines, as employers begin to move away from the four-year degree programs, these colleges have a choice. They either reform and make the necessary changes to adapt, or they continue what they're doing, and ultimately they will go out of business.
Well, and how was it that these, even the ideologues, did not foresee that, I think it was Ron DeSantis who called it discrimination, exclusion, and indoctrination, that we were going to get wise to this very quickly when we realized what it was they were pushing on college campuses? Even the ideologues must have realized the hazard of what they were going into, or did they?
No, I don't think they did realize. I think they got overly ambitious. I think with the coronavirus, that gave them a big push. And then the focus on the George Floyd riots that ensued following his death, I think the colleges thought that they would be able to get away with this and that the American people would simply bow down. But as tuition costs go up and the value of a four-year degree goes down, Well, nobody wants to end up $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 in the hole and unable to find the job when they graduate. I mean, let's be honest. Most people attend colleges because they want to graduate and start a career. Well, if you can't do that because employers don't like the people that are coming in, the recent college graduates, then that degree is kind of useless. And imagine paying $120,000 to have to work in some retail chain because nobody wants you because of the college you attended.
Well, and one of the things that's always bothered me, Professor, is this overemphasis on credentialism. And I guess you can call it that, where you walk in and you say, well, I came up with some new ideas. Well, do you have a PhD? No. Well, then you can't come up with new ideas. You're not allowed to do it. You have to go out and get this credential because the credential certifies that. Now, I realize you're a college professor, so some credentials are essential for doing certain jobs. I don't want to go to a doctor that didn't go to medical school. On the other hand, the best builder in the world may not be the guy who's got a degree in material science or something like that.
Well, yes, but the one thing I will say is it's not necessarily about credentialing. I mean, if we go back 40, 50, 60 years ago, the liberal arts programs were designed to educate students and create a productive citizenry.
Yep.
If you could make it through the four-year university system, it showed that you were dedicated, that you were willing to work hard, you were willing to put the effort in. But as standards routinely dropped throughout the decades and then completely collapsed over the last 4 years, well, then it becomes a question of, well, why even go to college?
Yeah.
If we're just going to cycle students through and they graduate and only 36% of them can think critically and they can't read, they can't write, well, then what's the point of college? And I think that's where we've come. I think that's why colleges have started to realize that they need to reverse this trend because the future isn't that bright. And it gets even worse when we look at the decline in the birth rate and the future populations that are going to be enrolling in school. The numbers are going to be a lot smaller, and there's going to be a lot of competition for those students.
Yeah, and when you run somebody through 4 years of college to get an undergrad degree, and you say, I've proved that I can work through the system and fulfill all the things I'm told to do, that isn't necessarily somebody who's going to be critically thinking. And if you're told there are certain things you're not allowed to think or say, that seems like another way to clamp down on any kind of creativity. That's Nicholas Giordano. He's a professor of political science at Suffolk Community College. He's also a Campus Reforms Higher Education Fellowship. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show on a Tuesday.
The Lars Larson Show.
Brought to you by Kevin Hunt Insurance in Templeton. Whether it's home, auto, life, or business, call Kevin Hunt Insurance. Some clouds tonight and overnight lows right around 40. Clouds and sunshine mixed in on your Wednesday. Upper 60s, low 60s Thursday. Weather was brought to you by Kevin Hunt Insurance in Templeton. Call 434-3276.
This Saturday night, it's the annual Vine Street Victorian Christmas Showcase. A present to the community from the Paso Robles Main Street Association, the City of Paso Robles, and Vine Street neighbors and businesses. Stroll down historic Vine Street between 8th and 21st Streets and see beautifully decorated homes, Scrooge, the Snow King and Queen, and Santa and Mrs. Claus. Vine Street Victorian Christmas Showcase, this Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m.
Greetings, KPRL listeners. I'm Susanna Luthi, political reporter and California news correspondent, inviting